morning we'll turn again to Philippians chapter 3, and those of you who have been here through the week will know that we're looking through this book in the sessions that I am responsible for. And we looked last night at the first half of Philippians chapter 3, where Paul talks about the nature of true righteousness. You see, the end product of the gospel is not simply that we're going somewhere, but that we are being something. We are going somewhere. But I did some studies this last year in the book of Romans. I taught a series of studies on the book of Romans to our students in England. And I had not studied Romans properly before. And Romans, as you will know, I'm sure, is one of the most systematic expositions of the nature and purpose of salvation in the entire New Testament. But it's very interesting, when you study in that book what is the nature of salvation, what is salvation about, you discover that salvation is not primarily a salvation from hell to heaven. In fact, heaven is never mentioned in the book of Romans, even though it's all about salvation. It's not primarily a salvation from guilt to innocence or forgiveness. That's the wonderful part of it, of course. It's not primarily a salvation from death to life. That is wonderful. But the message of the book of Romans is that the nature of salvation is that it is a salvation from unrighteousness to righteousness. Now, the cause of that is that we're saved from our guilt, we're forgiven, we're cleansed. The consequence of that is we're going to heaven instead of hell. The means to that is that we receive life instead of death, the life of God within us. But the actual substance, the actual measuring stick of our salvation is the extent to which the righteousness of God is evident within us. And the behavior patterns reveal the character of God. And here in Philippians 3, what Paul talks about is the nature of true righteousness. We talked last night about the false grounds of righteousness, which Paul himself describes from his own experience. They have their root in the law, and he describes in his own experience how he was circumcised on the eighth day. He was of the people of Israel, that is, his parents were Israelites by birth, they weren't proselytes. He was of the tribe of Benjamin, that clearly carried some standing, perhaps because Benjamin was the only son of Jacob to be born in Canaan, and whether that gave special status to the tribe of Benjamin, we're not sure altogether. But clearly, in writing to these people, Paul knew they understood there was some status attached to being part of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews. Regard the law of Pharisee, that is, I didn't just keep the laws, but I also kept the fences that were built around the laws to stop you getting close to breaking the real law. As for zeal for the law, I persecuted the church. As for legalistic righteousness, I was faultless. That is some statement to make, that I so kept the law that you could not point the finger at me. Then he says, whatever was to my profit was lost. Three times it was lost. It was lost. And then he says it was rubbish. And what is wrong with the law is not what the law demands, because the law reveals God's character. When God gave the law to Moses on Mount Sinai, it was a revelation of his own character. But the problem with the law, and the reason why the law that was given by God, written by his own finger, the Ten Commandments at least, and then the amplification of that given to Moses on Mount Sinai, the plumb line by which the people of Israel were judged, when Jesus came on the scene. He said, I've not come to abolish the law. The law, as we pointed out last night, was held in high regard until Paul came along and said, the law is a curse. Why did Paul say that? What was the problem with the law? The problem was, as we said last night, that the law works from the outside in. The law can house train you. You remember? It can make you behave, teach you how to behave. It can inflict penalty when you don't behave. And it can knock you into shape. But actually, that's all it can do. House train you. But it doesn't change the real you. And as I described the house training process of our cats at home, the cats do not do what is wrong as long as we're there. If we're not there, they couldn't care less because they have no moral consciousness. There's nothing inside the cat that's changed. It's just, it knows if I do certain things I'm not supposed to do, I get into trouble. To avoid the trouble, don't do them. That's all. And you know, it's possible to be house trained as Christians, as we were saying last night. That is, we, to all intents and appearances, seem to be doing fine. But you know and I know, when we're alone, if all we have ever known is a house training process, we're living by the law, then the real me is unaffected, and the real me when nobody is watching is different. So at home and around, to know I behave in a certain way, but when I'm where nobody knows me, who cares? The real me comes out. So if Paul's grounds for righteousness is simply trying to conform to the law, he then speaks of the true grounds of righteousness, and forgive that repetition for those who were here last night, that it's necessary then to follow on what I want to talk about. And the true grounds for righteousness, which we began to look at, where he says in verse 8, I consider them rubbish, that I may gain Christ, verse 9, and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God and is by faith. That is the righteousness which is not related to what I am trying to do for God, but a righteousness that derives exclusively from what God is doing for me. His indwelling spirit reproducing in me his character. So I let my light shine before men. They see our good works, but they praise our Father in heaven, because they recognize it's not what you're doing for God, it's what God is doing for you. Now, many of us have a strong understanding of this when it comes to becoming a Christian. Justification is by faith, but we often have a weak understanding of this when it comes to being the Christian we have become. We are sanctified by faith. Justified by faith, that's how you become a Christian. Sanctified by faith, that is being the Christian you become. And it's by the same process. We are justified, recognizing I can't save myself, only he can save me. And I live every day on that same basis. I cannot be the person I've been saved to become. Only Jesus Christ can. And he, through his indwelling presence in us, transforms us from one degree of glory to another, as Paul put it to the Corinthians, into his image with ever-increasing glory. It's a process, and we'll see more about that a bit now. I've had a summary title for each of these messages, and last night it was Christ our righteousness in the first part of this chapter. But this morning, the summary title I would give is Christ our goal. And I base that on verse 13 and 14, where he says, brothers, we'll come to this in due course, but brothers, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it. But one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining forward to what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. He says, I am pressing on towards the goal, and that goal is that purpose for which God has called me heavenward. That goal is Christ, that I become conformed into his image and likeness. Now, we'll come to that in due course, but I think it helps you know where we're going. Let's go back now to verse 10. because there are several logical consequences of what we looked at last night. If righteousness does not derive from what I do for God, but derives from letting Christ do something in me, then verse 10, he says, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow to attain the resurrection of the dead. Four things there that Paul says now are my ambition. That if the Christian life, if righteousness derives not from myself, from my own obedience to the law, but it's through Jesus Christ, the righteousness that comes from God, and it's through faith.